Break out those old photos of Richard Nixon strolling the beach on Key Biscayne in his wingtips. Because after Tuesday, it's hard not to call Miami-Dade a Republican county. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup. I'm your host, Tim Padgett. In the next hour, we'll look at the Trump triumph, the MAGA makeover, the GOP juggernaut, the Republican rout, whatever you want to call this week's general election in Miami-Dade County. You could also call it the Democratic disaster. Donald Trump became the first Republican presidential candidate to win Miami-Dade in 36 years. And up and down the ballot, GOP candidates here marched in on his coattails. And if you think this was just a Latino thing, think again. All that coming up right after the news. I'm Tim Padgett. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Bienvenidos, bienveni, benvindo. Well, we knew former president and now president-elect Donald Trump would have a strong showing in Miami-Dade County in this week's general election. For one thing, from Florida International University had released a poll showing 68% of Cuban voters in Miami-Dade supported Trump, which means a lot since Cubans are the county's majority bloc. But even that tip somehow didn't seem to foreshadow that Trump would become the first Republican presidential candidate to win Miami-Dade since 1988. And he painted the town red. In all but just a small handful of contests, Republicans swept the Miami-Dade ballot. In the sheriff's race, the first Miami-Dade has held in six decades, Republican Rosie Cordero Stutz routed Democrat James Reyes, even though he was endorsed by Miami-Dade Mayor Daniela Levine Cava. And let's face it, she's the only Democrat left standing on this street. Like Florida itself, Miami-Dade County seems to have turned from blue to red faster than a piece of chemical litmus paper. What do you think Miami-Dade is? Why do you think Miami-Dade is now so Republican? Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Joining me now in the studio is WLRN's government accountability reporter, Joshua Ceballos. Also with us is Max Greenwood, senior political correspondent for our news partner, the Miami Herald, and Amelia Orjuela da Silva, staff writer for the Miami Times. Josh Ceballos, how are you?
I'm doing well, Tim. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with you because I know you covered one of the only Miami-Dade elections where a Democrat actually won. Former state representative Joe Geller won a school board seat. That might feel like a demotion to a lot of folks, but for the Democrats, it's something.
Yeah,
right?
Something.
Yeah, something. Otherwise, you watched Republicans win out all over the Miami-Dade ballot. What's your impression now after this election of how much more deeply red and Republican the county finds itself this week?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's no secret that just Democrats lost out catastrophically throughout the county. A lot of this, the seats, including the new supervisor of elections, which is now a partisan elected seat. Juan Carlos Planas was a Democrat who ran it, and he got routed. And like you said, the sheriff, it seems pretty clear that Miami-Dade has become a staunchly Republican area when we thought it was a little bit more blue based on the county mayoral results. But that did not turn out to be true.
Yeah. Max Greenwood, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Let me ask you the same question. Trump didn't just win Miami-Dade. He took it by a landslide with 55% of the vote to just 47% for Vice President Harris. You co-wrote a piece for the Herald this week whose headline said Miami-Dade swings right. Some would say the county was already shifting right. But how did this election make that shift feel so much more definitive? As if we woke up Wednesday morning and said, this feels more like Texas now than South Beach.
Yeah, and look, I think it's a fair point to say that Miami-Dade has been shifting right in every election since 2016. Democrats, you know, presidential candidates have performed worse than in the previous election. You know, Joe Biden won a fraction of what Hillary Clinton won in Dade.
Yeah.
Ron DeSantis and Marco Rubio won it in 22. So it's not to say that this was a sudden, unexpected swing. It's been heading in this direction. But I think what's really wild is, look, this was an 11-point win for Donald Trump in Miami-Dade County. The turnout that we saw, the Republicans had the advantage, but it wasn't a massive advantage. I was talking to sources before Election Day, and they were expecting, maybe Donald Trump wins Miami-Dade by 5 points or 6 points. I don't think anyone expected 11 points. So it was jarring to see that. And I think also to see the new constitutional offices, sheriff, property appraiser, supervisor of elections, to see those also swing so far to the right.
But is this just a one-off, Max, because of Trump's coattails, or does this signify that no, this is something much deeper, and this, this county is now red with or without Trump?
I don't know if this is a one-off. I think the result that we saw may be a little bit exaggerated and may be in line with what we saw nationally, right?
Yeah.
Miami-Dade has swung 19 points to the right since 2020. That's not a normal political change.
No.
That is, there's something else going on there.
Yeah.
Again, right? Republican turnout in Dade wasn't 11 points higher than Democratic turnout. What we saw across the country was voters, whether they were Republicans, independents, Democrats, Donald Trump picked up support among all of them. I mean, looking at Miami-Dade, it wasn't just the traditionally conservative areas like Hialeah that swung to the right. Even harder, it was places like Miami Gardens and North Miami. These are
Yeah.
Democratic strongholds where he did
Right.
pick up support. So
Yeah.
I think this goes a lot. In some ways, it goes deeper than Donald Trump, and in some ways, this is a pretty normal trend that we saw not just in Florida and not just Miami-Dade, but nationally.
Amelia Orjuela da Silva, thanks for being with us as well.
No, thank you guys.
You too wrote a report for the Miami Times this week that said, quote, Trump triumphs in Miami-Dade. What strikes you most about how different this election has made not only Miami's politics, but perhaps its personality as well?
Well, I think that this election reflect that Miami-Dade have achieved in demographics and also in the cultural part, especially with the context of the Latino vote. As many of us know, the Latino community has grown many in the last 4 years or so. And many of them live in Miami because it's closer to South America, right? So these results shows that Latinos choose Donald Trump. And it was also because there's a growing sense in the Miami-Dade and the Republican Party is a better fit for their concerns. I mean, I hear from family members from Venezuela, from Colombia, that all of them live here. They seem like the Democratic Party shows like a conservative like approach that often reflects those countries in South America that were led for socialism, like Bolivia, Venezuela, as it sounds Maduro. So they don't want that to be part of their life of gains because they escaped from Venezuela, from Bolivia, from Cuba to a Democratic Party here
Yeah,
in the US.
and I want to explore that a little bit more with you later, Amelia. Josh Ceballos, arguably the most striking Republican victory here, aside from Trump's, was in the race for sheriff. As I said, the first one Miami-Dade County has held in more than 60 years. The Democratic candidate, James Reyes, got blown out by Republican Rosie Cordero Stutz, 55 to 44%. Despite the fact that Reyes was endorsed by Democratic Miami-Dade Mayor Daniella Levine Cava, what message did you take from that result, not just about Miami-Dade's politics, but about where Mayor Levine Cava stands as really the only Democratic survivor in this county?
Yeah, Tim, that's a good point. And this was really a big loss because, like you said, sheriff is now a constitutional elected office, a partisan office for the first time in Miami-Dade in many years. And the sheriff's department is going to hold a bunch of resources in Miami-Dade County. And Reyes was kind of seen as Daniella Levine Cava's surrogate
Yeah.
that would have controlled that and kept kind of control of the police with the mayor's office and with the commission. And now that's kind of out the window. It's hard to say. You and I were talking about earlier, James Reyes has a Latino last name, and so you would think that he would get more of a Latino vote. But I think him and Cordero Stutz were kind of very similar in terms of demographic. They were similar in terms of values and platform. They said a lot of the same things.
Similar in terms of their experience with
Right. They're both,
Miami-Dade
yeah,
law
bo
enforcement.
both in law enforcement for many years. But I think a big part of it was just that Cordero Stutz had the endorsement from Donald Trump. And like you and I were saying, she had the advantage of having REP next to her name on the ballot. I think having Democrat next to your name on the ballot in this election proved to be kind of a death knell. The people did not want to vote for Democrats. People wanted to vote for Republicans. And I know people, I've talked to voters who they don't even know who the candidates are. They just say, they say Republican, okay, that one, or Democrat, that one. And it seems like the Republicans.
Yeah, I remember
really
Miami-Dade being a place where people were a little bit more scrutinizing on the ballot. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't just straight. This has become a straight ticket county.
I really think it has become. People are not really diving into. I mean, people don't know who the judges are. They don't know who all these people are. They're just going off of party. And to your question about what this says about Mayor Danielle Levine Cava, I think it shows that maybe she doesn't actually have that much clout with voters. I mean, she won in a landslide, so we thought that she did, but that might just be because she is the incumbent, that, you know, she's maybe had a good reputation in her work, and because there's no, it's a nonpartisan seat. Yeah. But when it came to the sheriff's race, I think people wanted a conservative Republican.
Max Greenwood, what race or races stood out for you in terms of how this election drove home the point that Miami-Dade is now a Republican stronghold? I know you mentioned earlier that results in cities like Doral impressed you. Why?
Well, I think if we're talking about what races we have to look at as bellwethers as to how far things have come, the U.S. Senate race really says something, right? And Rick Scott, just like Donald Trump, he won re-election this year in Miami-Dade by, oh, it was 10 or 11 points.
Yeah.
we're talking about a politician who has never won a race before by more than 1 point. Someone that Democrats loved to point to as historically unpopular, generally unlikable. They thought, I think going into this, that they had a much better chance at unseating Rick Scott than they did Marco Rubio. And, just like we saw with Donald Trump, this was a landslide. And, you know, by the way, he defeated Debbie McCarcel Powell, who is a resident of Miami-Dade County, who speaks fluent Spanish, who is an immigrant. And really talked about her ties to the county and to South Florida. And I guess voters looked at a former businessman from Missouri and thought that he was still the better choice.
The big fear with Marco Sopal for the Democrats was that she didn't have enough name recognition north of Lake Okeechobee. It turns out she couldn't perform south of Lake Okeechobee either against Scott.
No, and look, Rick Scott's campaign loved to kind of poke fun at this idea that Debbie McCarcel Powell is spending all her time in Miami in South Florida. She's not known anywhere else, and she has no interest in being known anywhere else. And to McCarcel Powell's credit, that wasn't true. She was trying to get across the state as much as possible.
Amelia Orjuela da Silva, you were at the watch party, I believe, for Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Debbie McCarcel Powell, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and again, she lost by another big margin to incumbent Republican Senator Rick Scott, as we've just been discussing. What were you hearing there in terms of post-mortem about why Republicans were so dominant here in this election and others, and why Democrats have fallen so far behind here?
Well, after Debbie McCarcel Powell watch party, like, everyone was so sad over there. Most of them left after his speech was over, where she said that they weren't successful in sending someone to Washington, D.C. that would protect their rights. But overall, I was hearing like maybe the messaging for Democrats were not right and did not resonate with many of the voters this time in Miami-Dade County. And also because, in the Black community, maybe they did not do like a good campaign to offer them what they wanted to do. And mostly the Latinos voters as well. As I said before, like the conservative approach and all that offers resonate with most of the countries in Latin America that have socialism. So I guess that now regarding the races in Miami-Dade that stood out for me, I think that pretty much the new constitutional offices races, that all of them were elected Republican. It was like a big deal for me.
This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. I'm talking with WLRN's Joshua Ceballos, the Miami Herald's Max Greenwood, and Amelia Orjuela da Silva of the Miami Times about the Republican rout here in this week's general election and why Miami-Dade could be called a red county now. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Josh Ceballos, let's step back a bit and explore the question of why the Republican Party has become so dominant in Miami-Dade County. Is it just Trump coattails, as I was asking Max before, or is it just the bias here among Latinos, as Amelia was referring to earlier, against anything politically left of center because of the dictatorial leftist regime so many of them came here to escape. Is it just a matter of the GOP establishing a more sophisticated ground game, especially when it comes to voter registration? Or is it all of those factors?
I think it really is a mix of all those things, Tim. And like Amelia was saying, yeah, Latinos here, they really associate Democrats with, you know, far left socialist regimes. And I don't think the Democrats have really been able to shake off the specter of that, you know, and Republicans can easily say it and it sticks. And I think a big thing, Trump definitely amplifies a lot of the fervor within the Republican Party here. But just from living here and seeing things on the street, I think the Republicans are really jazzed. They're really enthusiastic about Trump and the Republican Party, while Democrats aren't as much. They just aren't really jazzed up about any of the candidates, about the party, about the party's platform. There's nothing really for them to be excited about, so they're not really getting out there, while Republicans are getting out, and they, and you know, you see the Trump signs that say "Take America Back." I think there's this idea that, you know, their America has been lost to them somehow, and so they are going out in force to take it back from whatever it is they was taking it.
Good point. Max Greenwood, where do you think Republicans have been especially savvy in taking over this historically blue bailiwick of Florida down here? Is it also just a factor of Florida as a state having become solid red and therefore no longer a swing force in politics? And as you pointed out in your reporting this week, Kamala Harris didn't even make a campaign stop in Florida because of that. So a lot of voters maybe think, really, what's the point, right? Does that psychologically tend to make people here feel like, hey, I might as well join the red bandwagon?
You know, I think two things can be true at once, and maybe it's a chicken or the egg situation, right? Did Kamala Harris not come down here because, hey, Florida's not competitive, Miami-Dade isn't looking competitive, why would I waste my time and money?
Yeah.
Or, you know, did she lose down here because she didn't really put in much of an effort? I think it's a little bit of both, but you know, again, we've pointed this out multiple times that Miami-Dade's transition to a Republican county has been gradual, and then it kind of happened all at once. So if Kamala Harris had come down here, maybe she does a rally, maybe that helps motivate and energize some of her base, some voters that were most likely going to vote for her no matter what. I don't know if that fixes the entire problem. I think it's a much larger story. You have to look at the local and state Democratic Party, the local and state Republican Party. Republicans have looked for a long time now, very diligently messaged to Hispanic voters, to white voters here. They have the money and the resources. They registered voters. The Democrats don't have an in-house voter registration operation, and frankly, it shows.
Yeah.
So I think they really, you know, to their credit, the Republican Party has put in a tremendous amount of effort, and yeah, they control the levers of power in the state. Mm-hmm. That helps with fundraising, that helps with making laws, that helps with getting your message out.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think taken all together, it was a matter of time before something like this happened.
Look, I saw that when I was a young reporter in Chicago, for example, the machine there, only it was the inverse with the Democratic Party. Emilio Orjuela da Silva, let me put this question to you in a more micro sense. You're originally from Venezuela, and you know the very large Venezuelan diaspora here used to vote largely Democrat, but has now shifted to Republican. In a community like that, what have the Republicans done right and the Democrats done so wrong here?
Well, I don't know if the term "do some wrong" here in Miami is the right term. I think that Democrats, like, the messaging that they try to convey this time with the word progressive is something that oftentimes affects
Right, and we should point out that when they use the word progressive, when that gets translated into Spanish, it's progresista, which means something a lot more negative to South Americans, right?
Yeah, that's true. So I think that word scared most of the Latin American people in South America, often in Venezuela, Cuba, and Colombia. And I think that's one of the mistakes. Also, as you guys mentioned before, Kamala Harris didn't even touch Miami-Dade County. In fact, she sent her husband to talk with the Haitian community. But they didn't do like a good campaign in terms of Latin Americans people here in Miami-Dade County. Yeah. So I think that's why Republicans made a good job. And also the fact that Trump, in his campaign, made a clear that economy was going to be one of his priorities. So that's one thing that obviously every immigrant in Miami-Dade County and in the nation itself wants to do good. The last 4 years have been about inflation, and that's something that we as Miami-Dade residents have experienced. So I think those two things are what made Democrats lose battleground with Latin Americans.
I quickly want to take a caller here, Robert from Miami. Robert, welcome to the South Florida Roundup. What are your perspectives here?
Well, I just find it amazing with this socialism thing with the Democratic Party, because the services that they have given to the people of this country, Social Security, Medicare, all the social programs that give back to the people, if they call that socialism, it's incredible. And like I said, I used to work in a healthcare facility over in Hialeah, and a large percentage of the Latin community, the elderly, are on Medicare and Social Security and food stamps.
Well, yeah,
And this is because of
we should remind people, Robert, that Hialeah is the zip code that has the highest concentration of Obamacare enrollees, right?
Well, that's what surprises me. And if they call that socialism, I don't understand. The Republicans wouldn't give you a dime. And if they lose their Social Security and Medicare benefit, maybe
Right.
they'll scream then.
Okay,
Because
well,
it just amazes me. It
yeah.
really amazes me.
Well, Robert, thanks very much for your call. We're going to take a quick break here and be right back with WLRN's Joshua Ceballos, the Miami Herald's Max Greenwood, and Amelia Orjuela da Silva of the Miami Times to continue our discussion about this week's Trump takeover of Miami-Dade County. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. We're going to continue our discussion of the red tide that hit Miami-Dade in this week's general election, with former president and now president-elect Donald Trump becoming the first Republican presidential candidate to win the county in 36 years, and Republicans riding his coattails to win just about every race from sheriff to school board here. With me again are Joshua Ceballos, WLRN's government accountability reporter, Max Greenwood, senior political correspondent for the Miami Herald, and Amelia Orjuela da Silva, staff writer for the Miami Times. Share with us your thoughts about Miami-Dade's political right turn. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. I first just want to start here by welcoming WLRN's Palm Beach reporter, Wilkin Brutus, who was at the watch party for President-elect Trump in West Palm Beach on Tuesday night. He has dropped by the studio here to tell us a little bit about that. Wilkin, how are you?
Hey, Tim.
All right, so you had mentioned to me that actually, even amongst Trump supporters, there wasn't quite all that confidence that he was going to win, at least not this big. And then all of a sudden, they announced Pennsylvania went to Trump, and what happened?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. During the onslaught of the actual campaign, I mean, you felt the sort of cautious optimism in the air. And when you enter the Palm Beach Convention Center, you felt that in air as well. People were calm, but yet festive. There were
Yeah.
wine, there were coffee, there were all sorts of things. But then he started to win in some of these battleground states like Georgia. Once he won some of those battleground states and it culminated to Pennsylvania, pandemonium. People started running around, screaming, praying. The sense of religiosity was certainly in the air.
Yeah, and but there was also a little bit sense of menace amongst one or two Trump supporters toward the media that you recounted to me. Tell us.
Yeah,
about that.
I want to say overall it was safe.
Sure.
The
yep.
entire
good security there. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
The entire convention center was barricaded. There were no protests at all outside. Secret Service, heavily armed, West Palm Beach police, you name it. And so inside, I felt that, okay, well, perhaps we're going to have designated areas for media, which we did. But there were certain areas that made access to media much more readily available. And there was one gentleman who actually walked in and screamed, "It looks like a Dan Morgan here." And he might have been under the influence, but the fact that he had access to us in that
yeah.
moment, considering the fact that Donald Trump in the past has labeled media as the enemy of
well,
the people.
And he actually made a sort of an indirect reference to media getting shot maybe at a rally just before the election.
Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So that couldn't have been fun.
And he wasn't the only individual. There was another man who walked in and who was basically surveying our equipment, made
yeah.
eye contact with me, and then walked out. And so aside from those two specific moments, which I'm very happy did not escalate to violence,
yeah.
it was a safe evening, but that was perhaps the most scariest moment as a member of the media.
But you mentioned when Trump was announced the winner, things turned religious, which I think is sort of apt because this is a very religious-minded movement in many ways, right?
Yeah.
I'm talking about MAGA.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there were reports early on about Trump gaining a lot of support from evangelical Christians. And right after his victory speech, around 3 a.m., there was this massive choir that started singing classic Christian songs.
Well, let's hear that that singing here. A classic Christian hymn. So as you're right, there a lot of religiosity in the air then, right?
Yeah, and that went on for about 20 minutes. So I ended up leaving much later just so I can capture the moment a little bit more.
Yeah.
It was fascinating to see the juxtaposition between religion and politics.
Well, and that has been a central aspect of this election in many ways. Thanks, Wilkin, for your recounting this for us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim.
Wilkin Brutus is WLRN's Palm Beach County reporter. So Josh Ceballos, back to Miami-Dade County. Let's pivot here a bit to the Democrats and how or if they can climb their way back to relevance. You published a profile recently of star South Florida political consultant Christian Ulvaert. His clients include Democratic Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava, who won re-election big time back in August, as we mentioned, and Democratic Miami-Dade Sheriff candidate James Reyes, who lost big time Tuesday night. If we look at those two cases, is there anything we can infer about what Democrats and Democratic players like Ulvaert are doing right and need to be doing more of, and what they're doing wrong and need to do a lot less of?
Well, I think it definitely goes to show that I think riding the coattails of Daniela Levine-Cava as this like superstar Democrat, and we should say her seat is nonpartisan, but she aligns herself very much with the Democratic Party, that riding her coattails is not going to work. I don't think she has the star power that they think she has. I mean, a lot of Ulvaert's clients, including J.C. Planas, who ran for supervisor of elections, and Annette Tadeo, who ran for clerk of courts, they lost out. So I think the message is they need something better to grab onto, whether that's an individual or a messaging that's just not coming through.
If they don't have coattails to hold on to, what can they hold
on
to?
I think this goes for the Democrats here locally, but just in general, I think voters don't see the Democrats as having something that they can actually point to, like, this is why I would vote for a Democrat. There's not some clear thing, where for the Republicans, that's Trump, that like Emilio was saying, it's the economy, that's, you know, safety, things like that they can point to. And I don't think that was really coming out in the Democratic messaging.
Max Greenwood, in your report this week, you spoke to former Democratic State Representative Robert Asensio, who told you the Democratic Party here, quote, must take a look at itself. Republicans have gained greater results here because they have invested in this year-round machinery of communication. I was struck by that in part because Asensio is Puerto Rican and represents a Latino demographic here that still tends to vote Democratic. So when you talk to Miami-Dade politicos like Asensio here, what sense do you get about how the Democratic Party is losing that year-round machinery of communication battle with voters here, especially Latino voters, when you look at how dominant, for example, the right-wing Spanish language media tend to be here?
Sure. I think this is a story as old as time to an extent. This goes back to, you know, really you have to look just post 2012 after Obama won the state by a second time. There's always been this complaint among Democrats after every election that they lose Florida because they didn't invest in the machinery. They didn't invest in the nuts and bolts of campaigning.
On the ground.
On the ground. And they'll also complain that, look, among Latino voters, the Spanish language media landscape in South Florida tends to lean conservatives pretty strongly, you know, and to an extent that is true. But look, the Florida Republican Party, and I think by extension the Miami-Dade Republican Party, are some of the best funded Republican groups in the country. Mm-hmm. They have for years built an in-house voter registration operation. They like to talk about how they meet voters where they are. They know how to work Spanish language media.
And
not only work Spanish language media, but they've become very apt at what we call micro engagement. They're not just talking to Latinos; they're talking specifically to Colombians, Venezuelans, Cubans, etc. Right?
Exactly. And I was having a conversation yesterday with a RNC staffer who does kind of focus on data targeting, and what I was told is look, we have this dialed down to a science. We know exactly how to reach these different, not just broad demographics, but specific ethnic groups, specific national groups. Young men, especially. I mean, the Republican Party has built a system here that is so, I think, hyper specific and so targeted that look, they don't need to spend tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars in this state to win it. They know exactly who to go after, and Democrats are still trying to figure that out. And I think until they're able to, and until they're able to go take a look at their message, we're going to keep seeing what we saw on Tuesday.
But Amelia Orjuela da Silva, this is not just a problem with Latinos for the Democrats now. We saw in this election that this communication problem also exists now with Black voters in Miami-Dade County. No?
Yeah. I mean, this communication gap extends beyond the Latino community. It also affects Black and white voters as well. For Black voters, even though most of them voted for Kamala Harris, and we can see that in polls from Florida City or Miami Gardens, who achieved the 75% of the polls, they still like their frustration with Democrats focused on issues like identify politics over economic inequality and practical concerns like policy and education. Mm-hmm. But overall, like, they voted for Kamala Harris, and they said to me that Kamala Harris were the only choice and it was her future. So they were really sad. Yeah. Respectfully, for white voters, particularly in suburban areas, they have been like alienated with the party's stance on issues like crime and immigration, which they see as disconnected to their daily struggles. So, yeah.
Right. Well, we have Teresa on the line. Teresa, welcome to the South Florida Roundup. You're calling from Miami. Whoa, Teresa, are you in a car?
I am.
Oh, well, okay, all right. Now I think we've got that background noise. What are your perspectives here, Teresa?
First, thank you for taking my call. I just want to offer my opinion that I think it's unfair to the Miami-Dade voter to say that we only voted this an REP next to the name. I personally voted for Cordero Studs, not because the mayor was for her, but because of her qualifications. And I personally love the mayor and think that she's doing a great job. And I think the Democrats are going to come to find out that they never should have put Biden forward. They should have found a better candidate. And it was a knee-jerk reaction to put Kamala on the ticket. Yeah. And given the choice between two not very good candidates, I think most people said, you know what, we'll stick with the one that we know what he's going to do because he's already done it.
All right. Well, thanks, Teresa. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
and drive
you.
Carefully. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. I'm talking with WLRN's Joshua Ceballos, the Miami Herald's Max Greenwood, and Amelia Orjuela da Silva of the Miami Times about the Republican rout here in this week's general election and why Miami-Dade could be called a red county now. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Joshua Bias, in just the short amount of time we have left, I want to conclude the conversation by raising a broader cultural question here. If Miami-Dade is going Republican, red, how does that change the character of Miami and the way it sells itself to the world as a haven, for example, for LGBTQ persons, as a Gen Z Miami yourself? What does this hold for the future of what Miami is?
You always make me feel young, Tim. I think
I try.
growing up here, I definitely Miami, Miami Beach, Miami-Dade County felt like somewhere you could kind of just be whoever you wanted to be, and no one was really going to bother you about it. And that included being an LGBTQ person. But I think definitely in the past 4 years, especially with everything that the governor and the legislature has done with the Don't Say Gay bills and all these things, the culture wars that are unfolding in the school boards. I think there is a feeling among young people that this is no longer a safe place. I've heard and seen conversations online of people saying that they are looking to leave Florida because they no longer feel safe.
But when
here.
You say a safe place, you're talking about a safe place for marginalized
right, exactly. So for marginalized example, communities, yeah. Particularly LGBTQ people, they feel like they are no longer accepted in schools. They feel like they have a target on their back. And it's just, and whether that's true or not, there's definitely this perception that this is no longer a place that is as accepting of all walks of life.
Max Greenwood, do you think this seismic political shift in Miami-Dade has undergone, could it change the social and cultural character of this community as well, do you think?
I think it already has to an extent. I mean, look, I've talked to you know, many people at this point who have said, this isn't the Miami-Dade of my youth. This isn't what I thought we were. But look, that being said, Miami-Dade's been through some cultural and social upheavals in the past.
Sure.
It's always gotten through it. It is an adaptive community. And
a community that's still forming its identity, really, compared to other cities in the country.
It's changing all the time, and it is growing, but its population growth is mainly driven by people moving here from abroad, and I don't see that slowing down. I don't see that change stopping, and it's going to continue to evolve and adapt.
Amelia Orjuela da Silva, in just the 30 seconds we have left, I'll give you the last word on this. Where does this Republican makeover of Miami-Dade leave us, not just in terms of who we elect, but who we are?
Well, I think that the makeover really means that Democrats have a really work ahead to do. So who we are now, I think that Miami-Dade is evolving into a more politically complex battleground city, where identities are less tied to a party loyalty and more to a blend of personal histories and cultural experience and pragmatic concerns. So it's a place where conservative values are being embraced by people who want lean left. So it's just about identities and the growing and changing population of the county.
Well, we'll see how this plays out. Amelia Orjuela da Silva is staff writer for the Miami Times. Joshua Ceballos is WLRN's government accountability reporter. And Max Greenwood is the Miami Herald's senior political correspondent. Many thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim.
Still to come, we'll look closer at the role Latino and even Black voters are playing in Miami-Dade's political right turn. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Thanks. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. We've been talking in this show about the hard right turn that Miami-Dade politics took in this week's general election, especially the fact that Donald Trump became the first Republican presidential candidate to win the county since 1988. But we want to take a step back here now and look at two demographic groups, one whose role in this seismic Miami-Dade shift is well known, and one whose role is something of a surprise. I'm talking about Latino voters and Black voters. According to exit polls, Trump scored as much as 46% of the national Latino vote. That's a record for a Republican presidential candidate. Not surprisingly, he scored close to 60% of Latinos in Florida, and likely even more in Miami-Dade County. At the same time, Trump received a remarkable 13% of the national Black vote, including almost a quarter of the electorate in the heavily Black city of Miami Gardens. The once lily-white Republican Party suddenly looks like the big tent, especially here. What's your take on this move among Latino and even Black voters to the right? Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Joining me now to take a closer look at this is Florida International University political science professor Eduardo Gamarra, an expert on the Latino vote. Also with us is Diego Perdomo, a reporter for Fresh Take Florida at our sister station WUFT in Gainesville, who's been watching the Black vote in Florida in this election. Eduardo Gamarra, thanks as always for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Tim. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me start with you, because the Latino embrace of Donald Trump was extraordinary in this election, despite, for example, his promise to carry out a mass deportation of undocumented immigrants, despite the insults that were hurled at Latinos and especially Puerto Ricans at his campaign rally in New York last week. As I said, we expected Latinos to come out for Trump here in Florida and especially Miami-Dade County, but it was the non-Florida Latino vote that seemed to secure this record haul for a GOP presidential candidate. Why did so many Latinos nationwide, Eduardo, move to Trump, MAGA, and the Republicans?
Well, we're going to be analyzing this question for a long time, but one of the most important things that I think we have to understand is the following, that in our polling, for example, When you asked Latinos about the direction of the country, most said that the country was headed in the wrong direction. But I'm not talking about a small group. Over 60% told us that the country was headed in the wrong direction.
Latinos, yeah.
Latinos. And then when we also asked them about what is the state of the economy, most had this absolutely negative perception of the economy. So mm-hmm. what we know is that in any electoral process, when you have that kind of negative perception of the direction of the economy, it's virtually impossible to achieve re-election. And most importantly, it's even if you switch candidates, as was the case here, right? Unless you differentiate yourself from that record, it's very difficult. And Latinos particularly feel the economy much more intensely than perhaps others, right? Not only because of their lower wages and the fact that they don't have access to housing and so on. And when they're struck with a reality, this idea that, you know, in some measure you could tell them we have the best economy in the world, which we do, right?
Right.
But the reality is that when you look at the price at the supermarket, sure. the price of gas pump and the price of housing, those three issues affect Latinos perhaps right. more intensely than others.
The macro picture versus the micro picture, which many are now saying President Biden and the Democrats took their eye off in this election. Diego Perdomo, as I discussed with our panel earlier on the show, a surprising number of black voters, especially men, also opted for Trump. In your reporting for Fresh Take Florida, what did you take away as the main reasons for that? Former President Barack Obama had earlier suggested that it was maybe a sexist thing, that black men weren't any more ready for a woman president than white or Latino men were, even if she was black. But is the explanation more complicated than that?
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I definitely do believe that it is more complicated than that. In my reporting, I spoke to people as they were voting early, so I can't necessarily speak to results after that. But a big sentiment I saw among voters were just the feeling that their votes didn't matter due to complicated systems like the Electoral College and aggressive campaigning, mm-hmm. and also just not having voted in the past. So,
but what do you think was sitting in the minds of black men, especially when they were considering and then maybe even actually going out to vote for Donald Trump? What if it wasn't just a sexist thing, as Barack Obama tended to suggest? What was it that was going on inside the minds of black men as they opted for Trump?
Yeah, I can't necessarily speak to that. Most of the people I spoke to didn't speak to Trump, mm-hmm. but yeah, there just was very much.
Yeah.
There was a last minute change of the Democratic candidate. So I feel like that did affect voters' familiarity with the candidate.
Mm-hmm. Eduardo Gamarra, I know you feel that the Democrats have A, taken Latinos way too much for granted, and B, have made a lot of mistakes in recent years when they do try to engage that cohort. Where is the Democratic Party going wrong with this important swing vote? The largest minority group in the U.S., let's remind folks, especially here in Miami-Dade.
Well, Tim, I've always said that there are three things that Democrats have done wrong in Florida and perhaps even nationally. Number one is what you've just said, right? That there's this sense that Democrats have taken Latino voters for granted for way too long. And tied to that is the idea that that Democrats always start late, right?
Yeah.
Where in contrast to the permanent campaign that Republicans run, and then the third thing, and I think this is really we saw this now in the vote, is the poor selection of candidates with no real ties to the community or who are again selected late. No ties to the community, and they're competing against candidates that the Republicans have been fielding for years and who have these very strong community connections.
But shouldn't Debbie Mercer Powell, being a Latina, albeit from Ecuador, not really a community that's really represented here in Miami-Dade County, but shouldn't that have resonated with Latino voters here?
You know, although most people think that, there was a 10-point difference there with Senator Scott, she ran a great campaign. And she was a strong candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Did better than I think most people expected, but still, right? She doesn't resonate with the majority of the electorate, and particularly when you think of things like the way in which the campaign was framed, right? A lot of this community is you know is it's an exile community, and the Republicans have been really experts at framing this as a left-right issue, and I think that that in that context, right, Democrats have historically had a problem in trying to, and in fact, right now in the discussion, they're caught between the progressives who think that the Democrats lost because they weren't progressive enough,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the mistake probably in this community, and many people have said this, is that the Democratic Party had to really forego some of the progressive language and even on occasion the apology for some of the things that are going on in Latin American countries.
Yeah. Diego Perdomo, let me put that same question to you from the black voter perspective. For that demographic to jump from 8% for Trump in 2020 to 13% for him in 2024, does that indicate the Democrats are also taking black voters for granted too? Do they think, well, Kamala Harris is black, so we really don't need to go into communities like Miami Gardens because they're just going to vote for her by default? You mentioned in your Fresh Take Florida report that black turnout in Florida for early voting looked relatively weak. What was this a big reason for that?
I think you do bring up a really good point that with the lack of outreach into the black community in Florida, voters felt like they weren't informed enough. I went to an event, mobilizing voters through faith. And through talking to a lot of voting rights organizations throughout Florida, I saw that a big hurdle that they were trying to get over was fighting that misinformation and lack of communication to the black voters in Florida.
Interesting. How, Diego, I want to ask you also, how many fewer black voters voted statewide here in Florida in early voting as compared to the past?
Yeah, so with the numbers we have right now, or that I had when I wrote the article, it was about 48 or 49, and black voters were the only group in Florida during early voting, that's including early voting and mail ballots, mm-hmm. to have voted in a minority of their total electorate.
Wow. Okay, so considerably down then from years past.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, okay.
This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. I'm talking with FIU's Eduardo Gamarra and Fresh Take Florida's Diego Perdomo about the rightward shifts we saw among Latino and black voters in this week's election. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Eduardo Gamarra, I want to end here by sort of looking at the larger picture. Political strategists like Mike Madrid, in his new book, The Latino Century, call Latinos, quote, the new Reagan Democrats, referring to the predominantly blue-collar Democrats who shifted to the Republican Party under Ronald Reagan. Do you agree with that assessment? And if so, should Democrats start waving goodbye to Latinos as one of their core constituencies?
Tim, there is a very interesting article that Francis Fukuyama just wrote, where he basically looks at the demise really of liberalism in the United States, and largely he sees it as the demise owing to let's call it Republican neoliberalism on the one hand, mm-hmm. And the emergence of this identity politics that really replaced the focus of the Democratic Party on the working class. And so in large measure, I think that we kind of forgot that a really large component of the American working class are Hispanics.
Yeah.
And Hispanics are not really driven by identity politics or even the civil rights discussions that that Democrats tend to focus
as much as we thought. Yeah. Diego Perdomo, in just the 30 seconds we have left, same question. Do Democrats now stand to lose the black vote? Perhaps not to the extent that they're losing the Latino vote, but to a great enough extent that they can expect to see it affect election outcomes like this one in the future.
Well, I think only time can tell. Looking at current voting patterns and how much Florida has shifted to red, I feel like there is, that possibility.
Yeah. Diego Perdomo is a reporter with Fresh Take Florida at our sister station WUFT in Gainesville. Eduardo Gamarra is a political science professor at Florida International University. Many thanks to you both.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you for having us.
Finally on the roundup, If you want a break from politics this weekend, and who doesn't, South Florida offers film festivals galore. The Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival starts tonight and will run through November 17th. Several of the city's cinemas will showcase top independent films from all around the world. Being an old guy myself, one that caught my eye is called The Senior, starring Michael Chiklis, about a 59-year-old man who goes back to play football for his college alma mater. It premieres next Thursday night at Saver Cinema. Also starting today and running through the weekend is the Miami Short Film Festival. You'll be able to catch movies, also from around the world, of no more than 20 minutes at theaters around the Magic City. And last but not least, Key West 5-Day Film Festival starts this coming Wednesday. Those are three darn good reasons to get in front of the silver screen and get away from the cable news screen. That will do it for the South Florida Roundup. It's produced by Jimena Romero with help from Polly Landis. Katie Munoz is our Director of Original Live Programming. Mateo Sanchez is Digital Editor. Sergio Bustos is WLRN's Vice President of News. The Vice President of Radio is Peter J. Mertz. MJ Smith engineered the show today. Thanks, MJ. Richard Ives answers the phones. I'm Tim Padgett. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening. Gracias. Merci. Obrigado.
WLRN.